And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello and welcome to the RBLR Rays podcast. Thank you for coming along with us today. I am your host, Pat Davenport, and Zach is not here today. Unfortunately, I believe he's in MLB offices right now trying to figure out a reason as to why Jonathan Aranda is not an all-star first base finalist. But that's okay, because I am joined by two excellent co-hosts to make up for Zach, and that is Ben Whitelaw and Carter Brantley. Ben, how are you doing today?
Good. I've been doing nothing. I'm on my summer break, so I'm continuing to do nothing, watching some soccer right now. US up 3-0 against Ireland women's soccer. Making a lot of ice cream. Thank you for inviting me. I'm like, my brain's like frozen from that. I like science. So how's it going with you?
Good. I mean, you've opened a completely new door to me about olive oil on ice cream. That is like a thing
I've never even considered.
Oh, it's like so good. Third eye has been opened, I feel, that you've like opened a whole new flavor dimension. And Carter, how are you doing?
I'm good. I do have an awful confession to make, though. I don't like ice cream. I'm not a big ice cream.
What?
I know. I'm sorry. It makes everyone angry when I say it. I've never been into it. But I do love olive oil on, you know, everything. So if there was any way to make me like ice cream, it might be putting olive oil on. it's been good. The Rays have been cooking, so I'm excited to talk some Rays baseball for sure.
Absolutely. We can't put the ice cream anywhere near the Tampa Bay Rays right now because they are so hot, it'll just melt everywhere. And speaking of hot, what we got to talk about on this podcast. We got loads of stuff coming up that's really interesting about this week in Rays baseball. And those of you that have already tuned into a Rays RBLR podcast before will already know this, that we always try to bring the most current issues and examine them in a bit more depth. So a big favor you could do if you like what you hear throughout the podcast today is drop us a like and a subscribe as well. It means that you will not miss an episode as it comes out. You might even be able to tune in live when we broadcast there and even engage with the podcast while it's live by going to the YouTube live broadcast and dropping a comment. You can ask questions, leave your 2 pence. It'll be really, really good. And then leaving a like just helps out what we're doing, helps our exposure for the podcast big time. So those are two favors for free you can do for us. So let's get into it. The Rays have just wrapped up a road trip, one of what will be many over the second half of the season, but they've never let it phase them very much so far. One of the best records in MLB. It might be even the best record in MLB on the road, and went 4-2 on this road trip, despite a disappointing series loss to the Orioles. Let's talk first about the series in Kansas City. And the main thing that stood out to me was the fact that we only gave up one run across the whole series, which is a really, you know, entire pitching staff job. Carter, I'll start with you. What was the thing that kind of, which performance, I suppose, in the Kansas City series stood out to you the most?
That's a good question, because there were so many, you know, like so many great pitching performances. When you only give up one run, all of them are going to be pretty darn good. But the most fun one for me, at least, was the Taj Bradley one. He had a perfect game through six, I know, or five, I don't remember exactly, but it was kind of fun. I was doing the superstition thing. I was like, all right, I can't move a muscle, otherwise I'll give up a base runner. obviously, you know, he gave up a base runner anyways. But you know, it's Taj. You know, he's had a rough go of it, should we say. I don't know that he's long for the rotation when Shane comes back and if they decide to bring up Joe Boyle or anything else. But, you know, and he had a rough one today, too. He wasn't great. So it's, you know, it's tough. I've dropped him from all my fantasy teams. I was trying to hold on hope. But he seems like a nice guy. So I'm always rooting for him, even against my own best interests. But, yeah, so that was probably my favorite performance, just because, you know, it's good to see a guy that's struggling at least have a little bit of hope, you know, even if it's not necessarily logical.
No, I totally get it. Me and Zach talked about Taj last week about how, yeah, it was consistently inconsistent. And what the long-term future for Taj was, whether it was in the rotation, bullpen, or even moved on to somewhere else. Ben, how do you feel about Taj's future with the team?
Yeah, I mean, I keep picking him up, streaming him in fantasy. we see all these other guys on the staff, like, trying out new pitches, new pitch shapes, like, tinkering with things. And I'm like, all right, it's going to rub off on him. And then it just doesn't, we don't really know fully what's going on, you know, behind the scenes, but I feel like it's maybe like an orange flag that everybody else is doing things and one person isn't. Like, that's kind of, that's interesting to me. So I'm sure we'll hear about something 15 years from now, because they don't, you know, nothing gets out really, but yeah, it's just interesting when everybody else is, you know, trying new things, having fun, having success, and then one guy isn't. So even to start against the Royals, though, I think he had like one of, I don't think it was the highest, but he like threw the most pitches right down the middle in, or like one of the highest amounts in any of his starts. And there was like a zero slug or zero batting average against, which normally like that doesn't happen. So he wasn't like, necessary. I mean, he got good results, so like at the end of the day, that's what matters. But like, if he had that exact game again, well, he kind of did have that exact game again today against Baltimore. But the difference is the Royals are like a bottom three offense, and Baltimore's like a average offense, and that's
and that's the difference. Do you think you're right that it's interesting that he seems to be the only one not tinkering with his pitch mix, and if that's like something where the organization, like the pitching coaches and the staff there, are suggesting stuff and he's not working on it, that's a big red flag. And I don't think the Rays are an organization that tends to tolerate that for that long. So you wonder how long the leash is going to be on that. Or if not, it's either that or the organization don't have any ideas for him. But that doesn't sound right.
No, I mean, but they also don't tell anybody to do anything. They're like, They just show them like, hey, this is where your stuff plays. Hey, this pitch that you, like with Forrest Whitley, they're like, hey, we really like your cutter. And he was like, yeah, I really like my cutter too, actually. Houston didn't like it. And he's like, well, we like it. And then he started throwing it. It was great. And he's probably gone now. But it's that kind of approach where it's like, they're never going to tell you what to do. They'll just show you. And if you ignore it, like Shane Boz, he apparently ignored his cutter suggestion for like 2 years before he's like, okay, I'll try it. And now we love it. So, but again, I feel like that's almost maybe a little bit more. I guess it's not worse than like somebody telling you to do something, you're not doing it, but it's just interesting. Cause like he very clearly needs like another breaking ball. The curveball just isn't good enough. And we've kind of known that for like two years, I think is fair now. So, but also your brain doesn't develop till you're 25 fully. And how old is he? How old is Taj?
Oh, he's still quite young, isn't he? He must be around 24, 25, I would say.
Yeah, 24. Yeah. Okay. So next year he'll start throwing a better breaking ball.
Once the brain is fully activated. Yeah. Speaking of Shane Boz, I think that was the standout performance for me in that series. I mean, eight scoreless innings, absolutely exceptional. And you know what? He's just been that way since that cutter came into action. I mean, I think all good, like, you know, you could always dig into the details and dig into the weeds and the advanced metrics and things like that. But I think this was one of those where the eye test told us that his slider sucked. And we were like, why do you keep throwing that slider? And lo and behold, he's ditched it in favor of a cutter, and it has made him immediately massively more effective. That was, I think, my standout performance. And I think that's the one that we got to keep an eye on, is how Shane Boz continues to develop as the season goes on. Because I think his ceiling now has just been raised massively. In terms of the Orioles series, then, that was anything but pitching. I mean, losing 22-8 is like, it counts the same as losing 1-0. So I wouldn't stress it too much, but you've always got to put like a little star on a game where you tie the most runs allowed in franchise history. Carter, how do you feel about a player pimping their first career home run off a position player?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about Colby Mayo, right? Yeah, yeah. He seems like a character. He's had some weird stuff with like the Orioles and like him kind of being disgruntled about not getting playing time and not being promoted. So, yeah, he seems like a guy with an attitude, for better or for worse. So yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thing. But then again, like if I ever hit a home run in the big leagues, position player or not, I'd pimp the crap out of it too. So, you know, I can't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like he hit it so far. Like it was a bomb. Like I totally get it. Like, you know, but at the same time, like it's off of Jose Caballero. Like Jose Caballero is like 5'8". Like, why are you, you know, like not to make height into it, but you know, it's kind of like one of those things. Yeah, I don't know. It was weird, but it was a weird performance. Pepiot obviously just didn't have it. Like it happens.
Very quick hook for Pepiot too.
Yeah, Pepiot's going to bounce back. He'll throw six solid innings next time out. It'll be great. It happens. You know, no one wants to see the Ravens Bucks score 22-8, like a football score. Like no one wants to see that, but it's unfortunately going to happen over a 162 game season. So you know, flush it down the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one that you draw a line through. And I will say, I think something that's underrated is home runs off position players, because they throw the ball so slowly, you've got to generate the power, because the pitch velocity is not going to generate it. You got to swing out of your shoes to hit a home run off a position player. So yeah, I think pimping it is fine, especially if it's your first, right? But they did draw a line under it and won 11-3. And that was a really, really strong offensive performance. I mean, Johnny Aranda with an insanely long home run. I mean, I've been hearing other podcasts calling Jonathan Aranda fake and a fluke. Ben, I don't think there are any under the hood metrics to imply that. Have you noticed any?
No, he's just hit everywhere he goes. He hits, and he would be an all-star if he played for the Yankees. So that's
right.
Yeah. Yeah,
put up the exact same stat line. It would be a slam dunk. Like there wouldn't even be like a final voting phase or whatever. He would just get it. So he was always going to hit. He's hitting. I don't know if what is he at, like WRC plus right now? Like what's his?
It's high. I mean, it's.
On the year,
if it's not the best at first base in baseball, it's like top three or top
five. It's currently 164.
Yeah, that's
okay. That's like probably too high, but like 130, 140, like that's still really good. That's probably where he settles in, like long term. That's 130 is his career average. So that in 188 games, that sounds pretty good. I can take 130.
Yeah, and I love his swing, like, I love his approach at the plate. Like, he has like. He doesn't look like he's swinging hard, and then it's like, oh, the ball just went 467 feet. Oh, crap. Like, it's really cool to watch him, like, go to the plate and just, like, have this short, compact swing. And he's not, like, a huge fella or anything. He's not, like, you know, Yandy Diaz or anything up there. But he's strong. He's strong as heck. So it's really cool to watch him go to work up there. He's been one of my favorite. I mean, everyone's that's a Rays fan, it's been one of their favorite players to watch, and I'm no different. He's awesome.
Yeah, 164 WRC plus does lead all major league first basemen in WRC plus, including Pete Alonso, who's having a really great year, including Freddie Freeman, all Vladdy Guerrero Jr., all those household names. For reference, Paul Goldschmidt's batting a 115 WRC plus.
What a loser. What a jump.
Hate that guy. Hate that guy. Yeah. And Aranda also puts up 2.3 FWAR to Goldschmidt's 1 FWAR. It's just a joke. Do you think he's going to get in on the bench at least? Do you think Aaron Boone will give him at least that?
Yeah, if he doesn't, it would be incredibly surprising. But there's still a long time. I guess he could just like go 0 for 150 at bats or something crazy, you know. Whatever, and then his, you know, he's at Paul Goldschmidt's level, and then he doesn't make the All-Star team. I'd be shocked if he doesn't make it in, because he's been balling, and he's getting like national recognition. I feel like, even not from the fans, but like from like players and coaches and stuff like that, they'll recognize the greatness that is Jonathan Aranda.
Yeah, he feels like, you know, that when everyone, every single person around baseball called Ben Zobrist underrated, so it felt hard to believe that he was underrated because everyone called him underrated. Yeah. I feel like we're getting to that point with Jonathan Aranda where they're like, hey, this guy is the most underrated player in baseball. And didn't like every projection guy picked Aranda to have a breakout year, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, he's a very popular breakout pick for all the here's a thread about this baseball player and then Savant screenshots and, you know, saying just random things, but we won't get into that.
That's a whole different discussion for a whole different day. I guess the only thing about Aranda that I'll finish on is that, like, the whole thing was, can he play anywhere? Is there a position for him to play at? And he's kind of usurped Yandy Diaz, and he's not been like, he started out looking like he might be out of this world at first base, but he's kind of crashed back to earth a little bit. But I think overall, he's still a completely fine first baseman.
Yeah. It's fine.
It's first. Yeah. I mean, shoot. It
doesn't matter.
it does matter.
Incredibly hard. I'll have you know.
Well, actually, Guerrero is one of the worst defensive first basemans ever. Not ever, but in the season, he's like really bad. So it's there is like a little bit of skill, but it's the bar is very, very low. You just have to be mildly athletic, and most baseball players are.
Yeah. I think maybe we were spoiled a little bit by G-Man Choi doing the splits.
Oh, yeah. Right. We're going to be really spoiled by Trey Morgan. Like, he is something else. It's weird, like an impact defender at first base. Like, that feels like clickbait, but it's not. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So Twitter aggregators.
What's that?
Twitter aggregators who like to post threads. There's your guy. Impact defender at first base. Thread.
Yeah, it feels like one of those things where, like, you don't really notice if it's an average first baseman, but you notice if he's awful or if he's really good. And Trey Morgan's definitely going to be like the Christian Walker type, though. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy's like making a significant impact and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for Trey Morgan for sure. Yeah, he'll be great.
Definitely. And also, I think we also get to give credit to Yandy Diaz as well, who was a big part in that as well, had a big home run. And he's been on an absolute tear since the Rays got hot as well. I mean, Ben, have you noticed anything different from April Yandy to now Yandy? Or is it just the batted ball luck? What have you noticed?
DHing is really hard. Like, you have to, like, be able to turn it on, like, because you're just sitting in the dugout. Like, you can't, like, there's a reason, like, the player makes a really nice defensive play and then they're up to bat the next inning and they get a hit. They're like super locked in, and they're super, not to say that like he doesn't have a good attention span or he loses focus. It's just, it's a different approach. And baseball players are, I would think they're like kind of maybe on the spectrum. A lot of them, they all have OCD. Like, they love their routines. Like, they, a lot of them have to have the exact same breakfast every single day. They have to do whatever. Like, I mean, I'm kind of that same way too, but that's another story. But like, to have your routine that you've done your entire life disrupted, because like, nobody's like developing as a DH. Like, you don't, Yandy was playing shortstop in the Dominican Summer League when he was first signed. Like, he was a shortstop, then third base, then first base, and now DH. Like, that's a big disruption. So I think just getting familiar with the routine is important. Like, we've kind of seen it with Curtis Meade too, in a different sense, where he's never been a short side platoon bench bat in his whole life. But once he found a routine that works for him, it started to click, and he's been good offensively. Unfortunately, maybe not good enough to stick around when Kim arrives. I don't know if that's a good enough segue or if you had anything else to add, but
I thought of that
on the fly. So
that was a great
segue. Okay, excellent segue. Nice. He still got it, folks.
still got his fastball.
Yeah. let's talk about it, because Ha-Seong Kim has been rehabbing for a while now and is kind of like imminently expected to return to the roster as soon as for Monday's game against the A's. So if he comes in, we're going to need a 40-man spot, but I believe we've got a free one after DFAing Whitley. Yes. So we don't need a 40-man spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we do need a spot on the active roster, and that's where it gets difficult. And there are kind of four names on the position player side that could be in contention for being sent down or DFA'd or moved along to make a roster spot for Kim. And I think the consensus is the decision is going to come down to either Curtis Mead, Jose Caballero, Taylor Walls, and who is the other guy?
Jake Mango?
Jake Mango. No,
I think Burrell maybe too. I think they're Burrell's all kind of
yeah
in discussion. Yeah. Like it's just yeah. There's no like easy answer either. Like it's so tough.
Yeah. So from my understanding is the reason Kim's rehab took a bit longer is because he wants to get back to playing shortstop straight away. He doesn't want to ease into that. He wants to come up and play shortstop. So I guess we'll start with the current primary position shortstops on the roster and talk about their case for staying. I think one of them can stay for sure. Right now, Carter, would you send down Taylor Walls or Jose Caballero?
The Rays are always taking calls. Like I'm sitting here armchair GMing for like one of the smartest teams in baseball. Like, yeah. Okay. Caballero is probably who I would go with sending down or trading or what have you. He hasn't really been hitting nearly as much lately, and I still think of Caballero as being a pretty good player, but he's just not nearly as good defensively as Walls. His base running value is kind of redundant because Walls is a pretty good base runner too. So, and the versatility piece of it is really fun. Like, I love the fact that he's been playing in the corner outfield spots, but if anything, I think that speaks more to, hey, like, look at this valuable utility guy that we have. He can play in the outfield. Like, let's trade him. You know, like, I feel like that, if anything, that spoke more to them maybe trying to boost his trade stock a little bit too. Obviously they had a need as well, but, yeah, I don't know. I'd probably go Walls over Caballero just because I think Caballero is more valuable to other teams than he is to the Rays right now. It's not even a value judgment. Like, they're both pretty good players, but yeah, I'd go Walls over Cabby for sure.
You mean to tell me you would DFA, send down, trade the major league leader in stolen bases?
Oh, man, if he wasn't such a dingus sometimes on the base, that would be something. But, man, he can be real silly out there.
He really can. Yeah. Taylor Walls is realized that someone's coming for his job and has started hitting quite a bit better.
Yeah, he's been mashing. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you go well, if with his defense as good as it is, if you can hit, like, if he's not a complete black hole, the value judgment seems really easy on Taylor Walls. And, you know, he's looking at a 70 WRC plus on the year, but like, if you want to put like splits in to month by month, then, you know, you could say that it's much better lately. And he still seems to always come up regardless of his scoring position as well. But he has been getting much better at getting those runners home than he was early in the season, I would say, as well. I don't know if that's just changing his approach slightly. And also in the month of June, he's hitting a 109 WRC plus. It's a very small sample, but like, right, he's doing what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. Ben, is there any way, because I know there are lots of Rays fans that are, you know, smelling blood for Taylor Walls. Is there any chance that he moves anywhere?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's always going to be a chance. It just, I don't think it'll happen. Because kind of like the inverse of what Carter just said about Caballero, like, Walls is so much more valuable to the Rays than he would be to another team. Mm-hmm. And like, and when you have the best defensive shortstop in the game, like, it's kind of hard to just not roster him. Especially when, you know, he's kind of adjusted his approach, he's putting the ball in play. If you had to guess the top four players in Baseball Reference WAR on the team, no particular order, would you think Walls is in there?
Probably. I wouldn't.
I'll just answer. No, but he is. He's third. You got Aranda 3.1, Rasmussen 2.5, Walls 2.3. Yandy 1.7. So like, there's a pretty sizable gap in value, just because, you know, the TV doesn't show what he does defensively doesn't make him any less good. I mean Cabby's a good defender too, so that's why it's tough. It's like, is the drop off in defense from Walls to Cabby good enough to accommodate like the offensive upgrade with Kim? I don't know. There's so many moving parts. It's not an easy decision. So I'm glad I don't have to make that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also Curtis Meade is in that discussion, a guy that's never really managed to get a run of games. Really, he's kind of had to really just play as a bench bat and a very occasional starter, and that's led to some early pains, but again, better results lately. You do wonder though, with how he's been used lately, I don't know if that is an indicator that the Rays kind of don't see tons in him right now as a guy to run out all the time, and might find it easier to give him more playing time in AAA to kind of, you know, work on getting consistent reps and getting his routines in order a little bit easier than not knowing when he's going to play every day. Could Curtis Meade be the guy that they send down? I think personally, he might be the odd man out just because Kim is also an infielder that will probably play a mix of short and second base. If not, then when Brandon Lau takes a day off, then Taylor Walls or Caballero could play there and could play it better than Curtis Meade. And Meade is, he's got better, but I do wonder if there's still work to do for him. What do either of you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love for me to stick around and have a playing, like have a spot. But unfortunately, it's just not working out right now that way. Like, can't really justify benching Junior or Brandon Lau for him as much as, you know, maybe Brandon Lau has some peripheral stuff that's kind of wonky. But, you know, he's producing right now. Like, he hit a home run today. I know it was, you know, garbage time home run, low leverage merchant type thing. But,
Bautista, he's pretty good.
That was a hard fastball. He hit that one.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe that's a sign of things to come. I don't know. But, yeah, I'll be really curious to see, like, if this is just like a temporary sort of move for Meade. Maybe like they send him down and then they say, okay, we got to deal either Brandon Lau or Yandy Diaz. Like, maybe they decide to move on from either one of those guys, and that's how Curtis Meade gets a platform to playing time. Because yeah, right now it's just not doing to him or the Rays any good for him to just kind of be like another bench bat. Like, it's tough. I love Curtis Meade though. I hope that he, even if it's not with the Rays, he seems like a nice enough guy, and he's an Australian baseball player. Like, how many of those do we have in Major League Baseball? You know, like, that's pretty cool. So I hope he finds success with the Rays, obviously, but even if it's somewhere else, that's fine too. But yeah, I think he would be fine to send down, but hopefully bring back up at some point, because he's really cool. He's really good.
Yeah. And the last kind of person that's on that list, I guess, would be Christopher Morel. Again, not been the, he's, it's been a funny one. He's actually been fine results wise, 100 WRC plus, similar defense to what Randy would have been in left field, which is not great, but it's not like the absolute abomination that we saw in the short spell last year. He's been completely fine, but again, not used that often. And the Rays are now stuck between a player that they feel loath to use often, but also there's kind of that sunk cost fallacy of he's the big piece in the Paredes trade. It sounds like a silly question, but do you think there's any sunk cost fallacy mindset in the organization about Morel and keeping him?
I don't think so. I mean, he just doesn't have options, so it's kind of like I think that's probably a bigger factor than like we have to hold on to our guy, because they have liked him since he was like an international signing, and the Cubs were able to sign him before the Rays. But he's been really good in his short side platoon role. He's another guy who like took a little while. He's never had to do this before. He's never played like, you know, 30, 40 at bats a month and try to, you know, figure out a routine for that. It seems like he's got one. Super valuable in the clubhouse. If he were to somehow like leave, like get off the roster, whether it's like a trade or something, whatever, I wouldn't be surprised if Caminero just completely crashes and comes back to earth. Like, I don't think he would, because he's, you know, he's just so talented, but like him and Morel are, they're so close. Like, you, yeah, it, and that kind of camaraderie, that like the personality and stuff like that has value. So I think he sticks around, but if he can get more reps, I think he would be better. I mean, you could say that about anybody, but he's been this good in a short side platoon role. If he was able to play more frequently, like it would, I think it would be even better. And I'm kind of just rambling here, but basically I think Morrell sticks around. I find it really hard to just get rid of him when he's so talented. He's one of the best like power hitters on the team. You don't have too many guys that can do that. I think the Rays are like, I mean, because of park factors, it's wonky, but they're like kind of middle of the pack in power production, like in slugging and ISO. So it's, I don't know exactly the position, but yeah, they kind of need that power, even if it's in a very limited role, which I think, you know, doesn't have to be limited, but we'll see how that pans out as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think realistically, if I were creating like odds, I think Caballero and Mead are the two kind of ones that are the most realistic options out of those two, out of those guys that we listed anyway. But something that you don't need to worry about optioning and something that you don't need to worry about rostering too many of is the excellent merchandise available at shop.rblrsports.com. We have all the greatest merch for your Rowdies, for your Bucks, your Lightning, your Rays, your Sun, all at shop.rblrsports.com. And you can use the promo code Flappy for 10% off your order. I actually went to an aquarium today and saw some real life Flappy Boys. So In honor of me, you should go to shop.rblrsports.com, use the promo code Flappy to get 10% off your order. And while you're there, you should stick around and go to rblrsports.com, delete the shop, and you should read the Rays Roundtable every week. We have all sorts of incredible articles every single week, keeping you in the know on all things Rays, including stuff down on the farm, current day stuff. And it's loads of kind of bite-sized, digestible mini articles about various topics that take place throughout the season. And it's one of the best reads in not just Rays media, but in all of baseball right now. And it's awesome. I read it every week and I love it. You should go check that out every single Monday at rblastboss.com. So looking ahead now, we got the Rays are coming home to take on the Athletics, and then we got the Twins coming up. I guess the thing that will be interesting is Jeffrey Springs is going to be on the mound against us since then. Have you guys been keeping tabs on how Springs has been doing since he's left the Rays?
Yeah, not really. It's tough to go out to Oakland right now. Like, I know Luis Severino talked about it recently in an article. Like, he was talking about having to pitch at Suter Health, I think it's called, their version of whatever George Steinbrenner in Sacramento, right? It's tough, man. I don't really. Joe Boyle seems great, and like, I just, yeah, I don't know. Or the Athletics, I almost said Oakland, but the Athletics are a weird team, so I feel not really bad for them because, like, you know, it's Jeffrey Springs, but, you know, yeah, I haven't kept up with him at all.
It looks like he's been okay.
Yeah.
He's not been the lights out guy that we had, but he's been fine. Yeah. The A's are just a funny old team. You see some of the players on them and you go, oh, you know, Brent Rooker, he seems really cool. Oh, Denzel Clark is like Kevin Kiermaier reincarnate. and Lawrence Butler seems like to be one of the best hitters out in the league sometimes, but then also not. Do you guys have a player that, like, whenever you tune into a non-Rays game, they just are like, you're like, wow, this guy, whenever I watch him, just seems like the greatest hitter alive. Because whenever I personally am watching him, he goes off.
That's a good question. I have to think about that.
Yeah.
Let me look at my fantasy teams, because I feel like I roster those guys because I'm like, oh, they're good.
Right. I will say, I think for me, it's Riley Green, the Tigers guy. I have him on my fantasy teams. And I'm not the – all right, I'm going to toot my own horn here, but I was at one of the Tigers games 2 weeks ago, whenever it was Rays Detroit, and I was there with a buddy of mine, and it was the Riley Green home run. And I'm not even kidding, before the at bat, I was like, man, Riley Green's gonna hit a bomb here. Like, he's gonna do it. And then he hit a freaking tank, and I was like, God dang it, Riley Green, he's just really good. Plus he's on one of my fantasy teams, and he's just been outstanding. Like, he's one of the best, like, power hitters or power corner outfielders in baseball. He's awesome. If he doesn't make the All-Star team, I'd be surprised. He's another one that deserves a spot there. So, yeah, Riley Green's probably my pick. He's probably my guy.
For me, it's Romy Gonzalez of the Red Sox. Every time I tune in, he's either hit like a clutch double or a home run or something. I don't know what's going on with Romy Gonzalez, but I think he's the greatest player of all time, low-key. Because he's always going off. And like I said, I'm housemates with a Red Sox fan. So if there's not a Rays game on and the Red Sox are on, I'll tune into a Red Sox game and Romy Gonzalez is hitting a home run for some reason.
Yeah, I think there was this tweet I saw where it was like him and Rob Refsnyder versus lefties are like prime Barry Bonds. Yeah.
Rob Refsnyder, Rays legend, really created a career for himself as like ultimate lefty masher.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ben, do you have a guy?
Yeah, I think that would probably be my guy, I think, Refsnyder. Because I think he's going to be a really good manager someday. He seems like a guy that just, he gets it. He understands, you know, he can communicate with players. I remember from, you know, listening to him in interviews when he was with the Rays, like super thoughtful, like almost like a front office guy in the clubhouse. So I could definitely see him as a manager someday.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a player.
Definitely. And I guess the last thing I want to talk about is we're at the halfway point. We've reached the official halfway point, not the All-Star break, like that's not at the halfway point. And the Rays ended up getting to, let me get this right, to 46-35 after 81 games. Which had at the time had them half a game out of the AL East and with the top wild card. Prominent. I'm trying to sound professional like a journalist here. Maybe my accent will help me out. A prominent baseball personality claimed that this was not a sustainable outlook for the Rays to continue to be in the division hunt, and he claimed in the same sentence that it was more likely the Baltimore Orioles return to form and make a run at the playoffs than the Rays stay in the division hunt. Carter, is this Rays hot streak mirage, or are the Rays here to stay?
It's tough because like no team is going to perform the way that the Rays have the past month for the rest of the year. Like that's just not going to happen. But I wouldn't go as far to say that it's a mirage or anything. That's a bit silly. They have the pitching to be really good for the rest of the year. And as long as their hitters cannot be like, they don't have to be as good as they have been recently, but as long as they're, you know, decent, then they'll be really good and they'll be in the hunt. And the Orioles, I mean, I've made my feelings about the Orioles known before. I don't like the Orioles, so like, you know, screw them. I'm not trying to talk about the Orioles. Yeah, I think the Rays are going to be fine. Like, yeah, they've put themselves in such a good position for the rest of the year with Ha-Seong Kim coming back and with Shane McClanahan potentially coming back. Like they have these like additions that aren't even trade deadline additions. They're just additions through injury. So I think that's really, really fun. And they haven't been full strength yet, and they're still already one of the best teams in the American League. And this is a weak American League this year. Like the Tigers are really good, but the Yankees aren't all that. I'm not really confident in the Astros. Like the Rays could make some noise in the playoffs too. So I'm really excited. I don't know where they're coming from with that, but maybe they're looking at some weird Pythagorean record, or maybe they're just going off of vibes and they're just, you know, I don't know. That just seems silly to me, but what do I know?
Hey, you know more than many people, I would say, Carter. I'm a strong Pythagorean record, expected win loss record. I'm on the record as a hater of those.
Yeah, stats. I don't dig it. Yeah.
Can't stand them.
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, I don't really get it either. Like I'm sure there's a kernel of truth to it. Like I'm sure there's maybe like a little bit to it, but I don't buy, I'm not, I'm not picking up what they're putting down with that. I don't dig it. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of a hater as well.
Yeah, because we lost one game 22-8, then
yeah, we exactly. Lost
two more games across the rest of the season. Like, yeah. it doesn't make sense. No. Ben, what's your outlook on the Rays? Can they stay in the? Do you think they have a chance at the AL East title? Do you think they can push on at this rate that they've been playing on the past month, or do you reckon we should expect a kind of return to kind of middling play?
I mean, kind of like Carter said, like, I don't think they'll be like the best team in baseball. Well, they could be the best team in baseball the rest of the way, but they do have two impact guys coming back, Kim in the next week, and then McClanahan, he'll be in, but as long as he's back for the playoffs, honestly, because right now it's like Rasmussen is the number one starter, and then it's just a mixed bag for number two in a playoff series. So you kind of need McClanahan, but he'll get here. Those are two excellent additions. They also still have the depth to overcome like any other kind of injuries that they might have along the way. Right. But I mean, it's about to be July and they're one of the top teams. So it's pretty solid by now. Like the teams that are at the bottom of the divisions are going to start selling. And the Rays are actually one of three teams that have an away record above 500 and a record against 500 teams above like winning teams. Sure. Above 500. So it's like, that's pretty real. You know, and their home record, actually their weak point, which is something that they recently figured out how to compete there. So they should be fine. I expect them to be in the playoffs, whether it's a wild card spot or maybe they challenge for the division, who knows. Four games up on the next closest wild card spot. And there are, okay, so there are three wild card spots. We got the three that are in. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So there are nine teams fighting for three spots. And one of those nine teams is the Royals, which I think they're out of it. I don't expect the Twins to be that good. So it's really like seven teams for three spots. And I like the Rays over Boston, Cleveland, Texas, LA, Seattle, maybe. I don't know. Seattle's weird. And Toronto, I think Toronto's fake. Like, if you're going to pick out a team in the AL East that's fake right now, it's Toronto. Like, they don't have the pitching to keep pitching this well. It's just not real. Their offense is okay. Their defense is pretty good. But, yeah, they seem fine. They just need to keep winning. You need, 15 wins a month to get to 90 for the season. And they've already got that for July. I think they're at 17, right? I don't know. I'll have to check Baseball Reference. But basically, they've banked a couple. Or no, 17 for June. Banked a couple for July, which is tricky because you got the All-Star break, so you don't have that many games. But right. They should still be able to win 15 in July. And most of their games for the rest of the year are on the road, and they've been one of the best road teams. So I like their odds.
Yeah, me too. I think division will be interesting because I struggle to figure out if this Yankees team is any good or not, which I guess answers my question for me. But you know, when you have Aaron Judge and he can just carry you, then you know that, mm-hmm. that can sometimes be enough. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the second half shakes out. My last question before we wrap up. We're pretty sure that the Rays are going to be in it and are unlikely to be traditional sellers at the deadline. Is there any if you could pick one position that the Rays could add at the deadline? I won't single you down to a player at this stage, but if there was a position that you would like to fortify going into the dog days, where would you go?
Oof, that's a tough one. I mean, it's always so impossible to pick out players or positions that the Rays are going to target, because I could say, like, you know, I don't know, I could pick a position and then they'll just like go the complete other direction, you know what I mean? And that's just how they are, and they always find success with it. So I don't know if I can really narrow down a position, because like you could say center field, because you know it's kind of been a rotating door, but they have Chandler Simpson there, and then Johnny DeLuca is going to hopefully come back eventually, so can't really say that. Could say a corner outfield spot maybe, but Josh Lowe has been fantastic. And then you have Christopher Morel, hopefully will get more playing time if he eventually earns it. Chandler Simpson could shift over the left once Johnny. So they just have a lot of answers. I don't know that they have really any specific position that they're really going to focus on. I know you said that like they're going to be really good, and I don't expect them to be like sellers. You know, they're going to be selling off all their pieces or anything, but I do think that they'll all, I mean, they always do this, but I do think they'll be in that middle lane where they maybe do a little bit of both. I think we'll maybe see something unexpected where they maybe trade a player that's starting or something. And then everyone's like, oh, what the heck? Like they're winning. Why are they doing this? And it's like, hey, chill out. Like they've got an answer for that. It's okay. Like they're trying to, you know, it's the perpetual machine. They got to keep it oiled. So yeah, I'm excited for this trade deadline. Like I am every year with the Rays because they always do some creative stuff. But I definitely don't see last year's, you know, massive kind of sell happening, but something more down the middle for sure. I think they'll be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a bit of an unpredictable deadline for the Rays. Yeah. Because there's no like, oh, we definitely need to fix that. Unless Ben has something that he's like, oh, we definitely need to go get this.
No, I mean, it just kind of depends on where Johnny DeLuca is at. If you're confident that he's coming back by like early September, late August, which who knows when he could be back before then. But as long as you know that he's coming back by then, I don't really see the need to go out and get an outfielder. Right. They can kind of patchwork it right now. If he can't come back, then yeah, maybe you look into an outfielder, preferably like a right-handed hitter, because that's what Johnny DeLuca was. So like Harrison Bader, Ramon Laureano, those are two guys who could come in. And then same with the bullpen. It depends on how Emrod is feeling. He should be starting a rehab relatively soon. I know they said 3 to 4 weeks about 3 to 4 weeks ago. So that should be coming up pretty soon. And depending on how he progresses. And then you've got still Alex Fredo. He just started a rehab. He looked really sharp in the complex league. So he should be back pretty quick because reliever rehab, you don't need that much time. And then Nate Lavender, their Rule 5 pick, he's a lefty. He has to be on the active roster at some point, and he's, you know, rehabbing from his internal brace thing. So it just kind of depends on how those guys are progressing. But outfield and bullpen are definitely two areas where they could address, and they could do that with Littell, possibly, or some Rule 5 guys that like Bob Seymour. He's, you know, going to be eligible again for that. Nobody picked him last year, so I think that says enough about how the league feels about him. But yeah, he, maybe they get him this year. I mean, he's doing the exact same thing. It's just better results. So maybe the Rockies, I'm sure, would love that. They seem to like that.
Yeah.
I feel like Bob Seymour could do a madness in Coors Field.
He would be fun. He would be better than some of the other guys that are rolling out there right now. I mean, he's pretty much a DH only, but that's fine. Like,
yeah. Do the Rockies have anyone we'd want though?
No, but they can just have him. Yeah. Fine. Well, actually, I don't know. I mean, they draft really well, and then they like get to the player development side, and it's like, oh, they kind of just crash out. It's like how the Angels like rush all their guys through the minors because maybe they don't trust their coaches to develop players. They're like, yep, yeah, he's a major league player now.
Is Greg Jones still back? Can we trade for him back?
No, Greg Jones, he got released, and the Rockies, like, I think they signed him. No, not the Rockies. The White Sox, I think, signed him to a minor league deal.
Out of the frying pan.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Going from the Rockies to the White Sox. Good lord. I was hoping for better for Greg Jones. That kind of sucks.
Mickey Moniak, he's a center fielder.
They could trade for any
outfielder who hits right-handed and can play defense, sure, add him to the roster if DeLuca isn't ready to go. But that's not even like a weakness. It's just kind of like, yeah, we could supplement here, but this is a really strong team.
100%. I echo the feelings about the bullpen where with Emrod out, you sometimes feel like we're just missing a medium to high leverage piece sometimes.
Yeah, you just need one more guy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I doubt the Rays would go get like one of the in-demand rental relievers because if last year was anything to go by, the price for those can get pretty crazy. Like Jason Adam last spot of the season, we managed to get a really good haul for him. So I doubt the Rays are interested in that, but they might find a guy that's like, you know, reliever that you've never heard of, TM. A Nick Anderson or someone like that who doesn't feel like they're a big name, and then they turn them into a big name type pitcher. They might do something like that. But yeah, all to play for. It's going to be another big week in Rays baseball, and we're excited to have you guys along for the ride. If you have enjoyed what you have listened to today, be sure to drop us a like. It lets us know that we're doing the right thing, bringing you content that you like to listen to. And also drop us a subscribe if you're interested in listening to more podcasts about the Rays. We drop one every single week, but you can also hear some podcasts about all the other Tampa Bay sports teams. They're all here on this channel. And if you drop a subscribe, you will never miss an episode. And be sure to let us know what you think. Who should we de-roster in favor of Ha-Seong Kim? Who should the Rays go for at the deadline? You should let us know in the comments on social media. That's about going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much, Ben and Carter, for coming along for the ride on this one. It's been a great season to talk about some Rays baseball, and we can't wait to talk more about it next week. But until then, Rays up.
Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.